Happy April Fool's Day, everyone. It is Jags All Day, a podcast all about the Jacksonville Jaguars and the NFL. I am your host. We'll just go by Shane for the moment. So I'm your host, Shane, and today I want to get us all caught up on basically what has happened so far in free agency leading us up to the NFL draft. I want to talk about some of the highlights, some of the things I like, some of the things I don't like. But before we get into that, we can start with the biggest thing that has happened to the Jacksonville Jaguars, at least in the front page of all the headlines, and that is,
Can I get a price check on a Calvin Ridley, please? Price check, Calvin Ridley. Thank you.
As it turns out, the price tag for Calvin Ridley, this was by far the biggest thing that happened to the Jaguars, at least from a news perspective. That is that Calvin Ridley moved on to the nemesis of the Jaguars, the Tennessee Titans. And yeah, I was really optimistic there for a minute. In fact, I had actually recorded a brief video talking about my thoughts about the Jaguars re-signing Calvin Ridley in anticipation of the Jaguars actually signing Calvin Ridley, technically not re-signing, technically not extending, but signing him out of free agency, because remember, it looked like the Jaguars were going to wait until the free agency period began so that they didn't have to have that third-round draft pick going to the Falcons transition over to a second-round draft pick, which would have happened had they signed Ridley to a long-term extension. But by letting him go into free agency, the Jaguars were going to be able to save that second-round pick and leave it as a third-round pick. Unfortunately, just when it looked like the Jaguars were going to be able to go ahead and sign Ridley out of free agency, that was what all the news was pointing to, the Titans swooped in and plucked him from the Jacksonville Jaguars. Though the contract was a little bit spicy, I don't know that his production on the field warranted that kind of money. So the Jaguars ultimately did not, at least I would assume, were probably given the opportunity to match the Titans. It did seem like Ridley was really wanting to stay in Jacksonville. At least that's what the media reported. And obviously he ultimately went over to the Tennessee Titans. Now, that did not leave the Jaguars completely without any receiver action. Previously, Gabe Davis was signed from the Buffalo Bills. So Gabe Davis is a really interesting player, and had Ridley come back, it would have made, in my mind, the Jaguars one of the most elite from top to bottom receiver groups in the NFL. But with Gabe Davis, we're still adding back Christian Kirk, who is definitely having the best years of his career in Jacksonville. He was well on pace for another 1,000-yard season last year before getting injured in that Bengals game, which ultimately, in my mind, actually derailed the entire season that game did, because that was also when a slew of other injuries happened. That was when Trevor Lawrence really started to get banged up. But I digress. Gabe Davis adds a little bit of speed, albeit some spotty receiver work from Davis. Sometimes he has a penchant for making big plays. Other times he has a penchant for blowing big plays. But hopefully what we see with Gabe Davis being added to the Jaguars from the Bills, hopefully because he's not necessarily completely outclassed by a specific single target around him, hopefully the Jaguars are able to incorporate him a little bit better than the Buffalo Bills were on a more consistent basis, and get him a few more touches, get him in the open field, give him the opportunity to really break games open, and hopefully, if the skill positions can stay healthy, Gabe Davis is going to have a lot of support when it comes to other receivers and other skill position players in general, taking a little bit of pressure off of him. So whereas the Buffalo Bills seemed to really, really rely on Stephon Diggs, Gabe Davis has the safety blanket of having several other weapons the defense is going to have to target. First of all, Christian Kirk is obviously the focal point of the offense. It's well documented that Trevor Lawrence and Christian Kirk really get along quite well. And obviously they put in a lot of extra work. Christian Kirk is the safety blanket for Trevor Lawrence. Additional to that, though, Zay Jones, when he's healthy, is a solid player, and we saw it 2 seasons ago. He was very much banged up pretty much throughout all of 2023. But in the 2022 season, especially in the second half of the season, we saw Zay Jones sort of breaking out. He made some pretty great catches. If you recall the Dallas game, he had a long touchdown. Then in the Chargers playoff game, he had a long touchdown. So he does have big play ability as well. Evan Engram, obviously coming off the best 2 years of his career, he's finally been able to stay healthy as a Jacksonville Jaguar, is catching more passes than ever before. He is that big target that really allows the Jaguars to really attack the defense with some mismatches with Evan Engram. Again, if he can stay healthy, that's going to open things up for the rest of the offense, including Gabe Davis. And then, of course, Travis Etienne is one of the most electric backs in the NFL right now, especially once you get him into open field, which the Jaguars are pretty good about doing. So the Jaguars have a lot of skill position talent, and that I don't think was really the problem in 2023, and I don't expect that to be the problem here in 2024 as the season gets going. So Gabe Davis, obviously a good addition to offset the Calvin Ridley loss. Another big signing, sort of probably the other big signing that we saw from the Jaguars, was Mitch Morse, also from the Buffalo Bills, coming over. The Jaguars are really looking to try to figure out this offensive line problem. And I think that's where the offense really struggled a bit in 2023. A lot gets piled on to Press Taylor, and a lot of people wanted to see him fired after the 2023 campaign, especially after collapsing from 8-3 and then missing the playoffs at 9-8. Obviously, super disappointing second half to the season, but I think a lot of those issues were rooted in the Jaguars' inability to run the football. Hopefully by adding Mitch Morse, hopefully with re-signing Ezra Cleveland, and hopefully when we get around to the draft, we see the Jaguars sort of beef up that offensive line even more, add some more depth even to the offensive line. Hopefully the Jaguars can actually get a bit of a running game figured out to take a little bit of pressure off of that offense. But to me, the other side of the ball was the bigger issue. So obviously the Jaguars' offense was really struggling from time to time throughout the 2023 season. They weren't necessarily able to string together many complete games. Really, you could argue they weren't hardly able to string together many complete games at all, like you know, top to bottom. If you're looking at any individual game outside of the Carolina Panthers game there in the second to last week of the season, the Jaguars were streaky on offense at best, and they really, really struggled in the red zone, which also ultimately was what caused their demise. The Tennessee Titans, they were right there on the one-yard line with an opportunity to possibly tie the game, and they couldn't punch the ball into the end zone. But the other side of the ball, if we go and look at the Jaguars' schedule from the 2023 season, you're going to see a lot of times the Jaguars were losing games, not so much because they couldn't score points, but more so because they couldn't prevent points from being scored. So going down the line of games they lost, their second loss of the season, it was early in the season, if you recall, the Houston Texans put up 37 points on the Jags. Going down the line even further, the Saints put up 24, though the Jaguars were able to win that game. The 49ers put up 34. Getting into the late season side of it, when the Jaguars needed defensive help the most, that's when things really collapsed. That was also, if you recall, when the Jaguars stopped getting as many turnovers, which I think is an important detail to think about there. But after the 49ers game, the Jaguars bounced back against the Titans and then won a close one against the Texans. But then the Bengals put up 34, the Browns put up 31, the Ravens 23, the Buccaneers 30, the Panthers obviously were blanked, so good on the Jaguars there. But then the Titans put up 28. So there's a lot of offenses there that should not have been putting up that many points. They were able to put up big points against the Jaguars. In particular, that Bengals game, the Jaguars were playing a backup quarterback and looked completely outmatched by the Bengals, even without their star quarterback. Going to the Browns game, Joe Flacco, fresh off the bench, puts up 31 points. Now, both of those teams have a lot of dynamic playmakers, don't get me wrong. But you would expect with quarterbacks that don't have much game experience that season, Joe Flacco, who is just coming straight off of the street about 2 weeks prior, they should not be giving up 34 and 31 points. Two games, two backup quarterbacks, Those both should have been wins. It should have put the Jaguars in a real interesting scenario to be actually in the running for the number one seed. And then they did nothing against the Ravens, did nothing against the Buccaneers, and just could never quite right the ship. In the time when the Jaguars needed the defense to step up just a little bit, that was also when the defense started falling apart. Now, to be fair to the defense, the Jaguars were also turning the football over quite a bit more at that point. Trevor Lawrence was definitely playing his worst football of the season down the stretch, which maybe you can chalk up to being banged up and losing some playmakers. Maybe you can't. But ultimately, the entire team suffered, and the Jaguars on defense go into 2024 needing help. Now, the good news is the Jaguars actually got quite a bit of help on the defensive side of the ball when it comes to free agency. The big one, of course, being Darnell Savage, who took one to the house against the Cowboys in the playoffs, pick six. So he comes over to help out the Jaguars on the back end. And then, of course, Arik Armstead on the front end is going to be hopefully an anchor there that can really turn the Jaguars front four into one of the better units in the NFL and really give them the opportunity to hold other teams down, to not let them run the ball as easily, and to get after the quarterback when they're in passing circumstances, and really give the secondary an opportunity to settle in and not have to defend for a long period of time. And on paper, the Jaguars should be in pretty good shape on the defensive side of the ball with some of these signings. There are some upgrades here. I think the Jaguars in general should definitely be generating a few more turnovers throughout the season with their revamped defense. Obviously, this is very much a case of time will tell. Defenses are a little bit less predictable than offenses tend to be year over year. So it's kind of a we'll see type of a circumstance. Obviously, the AFC South is going to be much more competitive. At least the perception of the AFC South is going to be a much more competitive division this year than last year. The Colts should be a step better than they were last year. Anthony Richardson, if he can stay healthy, should make that team a little bit more competitive. The Texans are going to come into the season as the favorite with the rising star at quarterback and also with a ton of cap space, because when you go from being a team that no one expected to compete to actually winning the division, it turns out you're getting a lot of players on bargain, so the Jaguars are going to be struggling against a team that has a lot of money to play with over the next couple few years. The Tennessee Titans should be improved, though I don't think they're going to be competing for the division title. Regardless, these signings overall, I would look at the Jaguars sort of their free agency period was a net positive in my mind. There weren't a lot of huge players lost. Calvin Ridley's the headliner there, but the signings the Jaguars made there with some of these veteran players should add a level of maturity to the team, should help the team get back on the right track. I don't necessarily know that the Jaguars are going to win the division because the Texans are a good football team, clearly. However, it should definitely put the Jacksonville Jaguars back into playoff contention, regardless. Whether that means a wild card spot or a divisional title, it'll be interesting to see. But if I were the NFL schedulers, I guarantee you I'd be putting as the last week of the season the Texans versus the Jaguars, because there is a very real chance that could end up being another divisional championship game going into the final week of the season. But of course, I would love to know all of your thoughts on the matter. Go ahead and drop a comment in those YouTube comments to let me know what you think about the Jaguars free agency so far. The podcast is going to be kind of hit and miss over the next several weeks because we are sort of in that dead period of the season. But as we get into the draft, we will definitely be dropping more episodes of the podcast to look at each individual player, at least from the first few rounds being signed by the Jacksonville Jaguars. So look forward to that. Otherwise, enjoy the offseason. Get yourself some rest, because the next Jaguars season brings with it, once again, some more optimism. The Jaguars, at least, if nothing else, last season showed the Jaguars are not the complete bottom of the NFL anymore. They are at least a competitive football team. So we look forward to that. But enjoy the summer. Enjoy the break from football, unless you're a UFL fan. And I will see all of you in the very next episode.